crow food. She would never tell Bran why his gaunt brother Hother was called Horsebane. No sooner had they been seated than Mors asked for leave to wed Lady Hornwood.
"The great Juns, the young wolf's strong right hand, all know that to be true. Who better to protect the widow's lands than an Umber, and what Umber better than me?"
"Lady Danella is still grieving," Maester Lewin said.
"I have a cure for grief under my furs," Mors laughed. Sir Roderick thanked him courteously and promised to bring the matter before the lady and the king.
Hother wanted ships. "There's wildlings stealing down from the north, more than I've ever seen before. They cross the Bay of Seals in little boats and wash up on our shores. The crows in Eastwatch are too few to stop them, and they go to ground quick as weasels. It's long ships we need, aye, and strong men to sail them. The great Jun took too many. Half our harvest has gone to seed for want of arms to swing the scythes." Sir Roderick pulled at his whiskers. "You have forests of tall pine and old oak. Lord Manderley has shipwrights and sailors in plenty. Together you ought to be able to float enough longships to guard both your coasts."
"Manderley, ha!" Mors Umber snorted. "That great waddling sack of suet. His own people muck him, as Lord Lamprey, I've heard. The man can scarce walk. If you stuck a sword in his belly, 10,000 eels would wriggle out."
"He is fat," Sir Roderick admitted, "but he is not stupid. You will work with him, or the king will know the reason why." And to Bran's astonishment, the truculent Umbers agreed to do as he commanded, though not without grumbling. While they were sitting at audience, the Glover men arrived from Deepwood Mutt, and a large party of tall hearts from Torren Square. Galbert and Robert Glover had left Deepwood in the hands of Robert's wife, but it was their steward who came to Winterfell. "My lady begs that you excuse her absence. Her babes are still too young for such a journey, and she was loath to leave them." Bran soon realized it was the steward, not Lady Glover, who truly ruled at Deepwood Mott. The man allowed that he was at present setting aside only a tenth of his harvest. A hedge wizard had told him there would be a bountiful spirit summer before the cold set in, he claimed. Maester Lewin had a number of choice things to say about hedge wizards. Sir Roderick commanded the man to set aside a fifth, and questioned the steward closely about Lord Hornwood's bastard, the boy Laren Snow. In the north, all high-born bastards took the surname Snow. This lad was near 12, and the steward praised his wits and courage.
"Your notion about the bastard may have merit, Bran," Maester Lewin said after. "One day you will be a good lord for Winterfell, I think."
"No, I won't." Bran knew he would never be a lord, no more than he could be a knight.
"Rob's to marry some Frey girl, you tell me so yourself, and the Walders say the same. He'll have sons, and they'll be the lords of Winterfell after him, not me."
"It may be so, Bran," Sir Roderick said, "but I was wed 3 times, and my wives gave me daughters. Now only Beth remains to me. My brother Martin fathered 4 strong sons, yet only Jorry lived to be a man. When he was slain, Martin's line died with him. When we speak of the morrow, nothing is ever certain."
Leobold, a tall heart, had his turn the following day. He spoke of weather portents and the slack wits of small folk, and told how his nephew itched for battle.
"Benfred has raised his own company of lancers, boys, none older than 19 years, but everyone thinks he's another young wolf. When I told them they were only young rabbits, they laughed at me. Now they call themselves the Wild Hares, and gallop about the country with rabbit skins tied to the ends of their lances, singing songs of chivalry."
Bran thought that sounded grand. He remembered Benfred Tallheart, a big, bluff, loud boy who had often visited Winterfell with his father, Sir Helman, and had been friendly with Rob and with Theon Greyjoy. But Sir Roderick was clearly displeased by what he heard. "If the king were in need of more men, he would send for them," he said. "Instruct your nephew that he is to remain at Torren Square, as his lord father commanded."
"I will, sir," said Leobald, and only then raised the matter of Lady Hornwood. Poor thing, with no husband to defend her lands, no son to inherit. His own lady wife was a Hornwood, sister to the late Lord Hallis, doubtless they recalled. "An empty hall is a sad one. I had a thought to send my younger son to Lady Danella to foster as her own. Baron is near 10, a likely lad, and her own nephew. He would cheer her, I'm certain, and perhaps he would even take the name Hornwood."
"If he were named heir?" suggested Maester Lewin.
"So the house might continue," finished Leobald.
Bran knew what to say. "Thank you for the notion, my lord," he blurted out before Sir Roderick could speak. "We will bring the matter to my brother Rob, oh, and Lady Hornwood." Leobald seemed surprised that he had spoken.
"I'm grateful, my prince," he said.
But Bran could see pity in his pale blue eyes, mingled perhaps with a little gladness that the cripple was, after all, not his son. For a moment he hated the man. Maester Lewin liked him better, though.
"Beren Tallheart may well be our best answer," he told them when Leobald had gone. "By blood he is half Hornwood. If he takes his uncle's name, he will still be a boy," said Sir Roderick, "and hard-pressed to hold his lands against the likes of Mors Umber or this bastard of Roose Bolton's. We must think on this carefully. Rob should have our best counsel before he makes his decision." "It may come down to practicalities," said Maester Lewin. "Which lord he most needs to court. The Riverlands are part of his realm. He may wish to cement the alliance by wedding Lady Hornwood to one of the Lords of the Trident, a Blackwood, perhaps, or a Frey."
"Lady Hornwood can have one of our Freys," said Bran. "She can have both of them if she likes."
"You are not kind, my prince," Sir Roderick chided gently.
"Neither are the Walders." Scarling, Bran stared down at the table and said nothing. In the days that followed, ravens arrived from other lordly houses bearing regrets. The bastard of the Dread Fort would not be joining them. The Mormonts and Carstarks had all gone south with Rob. Lord Locke was too old to dare the journey. Lady Flint was heavy with child. There was sickness at Widow's Watch. Finally, all of the principal vassals of House Stark had been heard from, save for Harlan Reed, the Crannock man, who had not set foot outside his swamps for many a year, and the Serwins, whose castle lay half a day's ride from Winterfell. Lord Serwin was a captive of the Lannisters, but his son, a lad of 14, arrived one bright, blustery morning at the head of 24 lancers. Bran was riding Dancer around the yard when they came through the gate. He trotted over to greet them. Clay Serwin had always been a friend to Bran and his brothers. "Good morning, Bran," Clay called out cheerfully. "Or must I call you Prince Bran now?" "Only if you want." Clay laughed. "Why not? Everyone else is a king or prince these days. Did Stannis write Winterfell as well?"
"Stannis? I don't know." "He's a king now, too," Clay confided. "He says Queen Cersei bedded her brother, so Joffrey is a bastard."
"Joffrey the ill-born," one of the Serwin knights growled. "Small wonder he's faithless, with a kingslayer for a father." "Aye," said another, "the guards ate incest. Look how they brought down the Targaryens."
For a moment, Bran felt as though he could not breathe. A giant hand
was crushing his chest. He felt as though he was falling, and clutched desperately at Dancer's reins. His terror must have shown on his face. "Bran?" Clay Serwin said. "Are you unwell? It's only another king." "Rob will beat him too." He turned Dancer's head toward the stables, oblivious to the puzzled stares the Serwins gave him. His blood was roaring in his ears, and had he not been strapped onto the saddle, he might well have fallen. That night, Bran prayed to his father's gods for dreamless sleep. If the gods heard, they mocked his hopes, for the nightmare they sent was worse than any wolf dream.
"Fly or die," cried the three-eyed crow as it pecked at him.
He wept and pleaded, but the crow had no pity. It put out his left eye, and then his right. And when he was blind in the dark, it pecked at his brow, driving its terrible sharp beak deep into his skull. He screamed until he was certain his lungs must burst. The pain was an axe splitting his head apart. But when the crow wrenched out its beak, all slimy with bits of bone and brain, Bran could see again. What he saw made him gasp in fear. He was clinging to a tower miles high, and his fingers were slipping, nails scrabbling at the stone, his legs dragging him down, stupid, useless, dead legs. "Help me!" he cried. A golden man appeared in the sky above him and pulled him up. "The things I do for love," he murmured softly, as he tossed him out, kicking into empty air.
Daenerys. The dancers shimmered, their sleek, shaved bodies covered with a fine sheen of oil. Blazing torches whirled from hand to hand to the beat of drums and the trilling of the flute. Whenever two torches crossed in the air, a naked girl leapt between them, spinning. The torchlight shone off oiled limbs and breasts and buttocks. The three men were erect. The sight of their arousal was arousing, though Daenerys Targaryen found it comical as well. The men were all of a height, with long legs and flat bellies, every muscle as sharply etched as if it had been chiseled out of stone. Even their faces looked the same, somehow, which was passing strange, since one had skin as dark as ebony, while the second was as pale as milk, and the third gleamed like burnished copper. "Are they meant to inflame me?" Dennis stirred amongst her silken cushions. Against the pillars, her unsolid stood like statues in their spiked caps, their smooth faces expressionless. Not so the whole men. Resnick Mo Resnick's mouth was open, and his lips glistened wetly as he watched. Hisdar Zolorik was saying something to the man beside him, yet all the time his eyes were on the dancing girls. The shaved pate's ugly, oily face was as stern as ever, but he missed nothing. It was harder to know what her honored guest was dreaming. The pale, lean, hawk-faced man who shared her high table was resplendent in robes of maroon silk and cloth of gold, his bald head shining in the torchlight as he devoured a fig with small, precise, elegant bites. Opals winked along the nose of Zaro Zoandaxis as his head turned to follow the dancers. In his honor, Daenerys had donned a Carthine gown, a sheer confection of violet samite, cut so as to leave her left breast bare. Her silver gold hair brushed lightly over her shoulder, falling almost to her nipple. Half the men in the hall had stolen glances at her, but not Zaro.
"It was the same in Carth."
She could not sway the merchant prince that way.
"Sway him I must, however."
He had come from Carth upon the galleous silken cloud with 13 galleys sailing attendants. His fleet, an answered prayer. Meereen's trade had dwindled away to nothing since she had ended slavery, but Zaro had the power to restore it. As the drums reached a crescendo,
Three of the girls leapt above the flames, spinning in the air. The male dancers caught them about the waists and slid them down onto their members. Danny watched as the women arched their backs and coiled their legs around their partners, while the flutes wept and the men thrust in time to the music. She had seen the act of love before. The Dothraki mated as openly as their mares and stallions. This was the first time she had seen lust put to music there. Her face was warm.
"The wine,"
she told herself. Yet somehow she found herself thinking of Dario Naharis. His messenger had come that morning. The storm crows were returning from Lasar. Her captain was riding back to her, bringing her the friendship of the Lamb Men.
"Food and trade," she reminded herself. "He did not fail me, nor will he. Dario will help me save my city."
The queen longed to see his face, to stroke his three-pronged beard, to tell him her troubles. But the storm crows were still many days away, beyond the Kaizai Pass, and she had a realm to rule. Smoke hung between the purple pillars. The dancers knelt, heads bowed.
"You were splendid," Danny told them. "Seldom have I seen such grace, such beauty."
She beckoned to Resnek Mo Resnek, and the seneschal scurried to her side. Beads of sweat dotted his bald, wrinkled head.
"Escort our guests to the baths, that they may refresh themselves, and bring them food and drink."
"It shall be my great honor, magnificence."
Daenerys held out her cup for Eri to refill. The wine was sweet and strong, redolent with the smell of eastern spices, much superior to the thin Gescari wines that had filled her cup of late. Zaro perused the fruits on the platter Jiqui offered him, and chose a persimmon. Its orange skin matched the color of the coral in his nose. He took a bite and pursed his lips.
"Tart. Would my lord prefer something sweeter?"
"Sweetness cloys, tart fruit, and tart women give life its savor."
Zaro took another bite, chewed, swallowed.
"Daenerys, sweet queen, I cannot tell you what pleasure it gives me to bask once more in your presence. A child departed Karth, as lost as she was lovely. I feared she was sailing to her doom. Yet now I find her here, enthroned, mistress of an ancient city, surrounded by a mighty host that she raised up out of dreams."
"No," she thought, "out of blood and fire."
I'm glad you came to me. It's good to see your face again, my friend. I will not trust you, but I need you. I need your 13. I need your ships. I need your trade."
For centuries, Meereen and her sister cities, Yunkai and Astapor, had been the linchpins of the slave trade, the place where Dothraki Karls and the corsairs of the Basilisk Isles sold their captives and the rest of the world came to buy. Without slaves, Meereen had little to offer traders. Copper was plentiful in the Gascari Hills, but the metal was not as valuable as it had been when bronze ruled the world. The cedars that had once grown tall along the coast grew no more, felled by the axes of the old empire or consumed by dragonfire when Gis made war against Valyria. Once the trees had gone, the soil baked beneath the hot sun and blew away in thick red clouds.
"It was these calamities that transformed my people into slavers,"
Galaza Galari had told her at the Temple of the Graces.
"And I am the calamity that will change these slavers back into people,"
Danny had sworn to herself.
"I had to come," said Zaro in a languid tone. "Even far away in Karth, fearful tales had reached my ears. I wept to hear them. It is said that your enemies have promised wealth and glory and 100 virgin slave girls to any man who slays you."
"The sons of the Harpy." "How does he know that?" "They scrawl on walls by night and cut the throats of honest freedmen as they sleep. When the sun comes up, they hide like roaches. They fear my brazen beasts."
Skarhaz Mokandak had given her the new watch she had asked for, made up in equal numbers of freedmen and shave-pate Myronese. They walked the streets both day and night in dark hoods and brazen masks. The sons of the Harpy had promised grisly death to any traitor who dared serve the Dragon Queen, and to their kith and kin as well. So the shave-pate's men went about as jackals, owls, and other beasts, keeping their true faces hidden.
I might have cause to fear the sons if they saw me wandering alone through the streets, but only if it were night and I were naked and unarmed. They are craven creatures.
A craven's knife can slay a queen as easily as a hero's.
I would sleep more soundly if I knew my heart's delight had kept her fierce horse lords close around her. In Carth you had three blood riders who never left your side. Wherever have they gone?
Argo, Jacu, and Akaro still serve me. He's playing games with me.
Danny could play as well.
I am only a young girl and know little of such things, but older, wiser men tell me that to hold Meereen I must control its hinterlands, or the land west of Lazar, as far south as the Yunkish Hills.
Your hinterlands are not precious to me. Your person is. Should any ill befall you, this world would lose its savour.
My lord is good to care so much, but I am well protected.
Danny gestured toward where Barristan Selmy stood, with one hand resting on his sword hilt.
Barristan the Bold, they call him. Twice he has saved me from assassins.
Zorro gave Selmy a cursory inspection.
Barristan the Old, did you say? Your bear knight was younger and devoted to you.
I do not wish to speak of Jorah Mormont.
To be sure, the man was coarse and hairy.
The merchant prince leaned across the table.
Let us speak instead of love, of dreams and desire, and Daenerys, the fairest woman in this world. I am drunk with the sight of you.
She was no stranger to the overblown courtesies of Carth.
If you are drunk, blame the wine.
No wine is half so intoxicating as your beauty. My manse has seemed as empty as a tomb since Daenerys departed, and all the pleasures of the Queen of Cities have been as ashes in my mouth. Why did you abandon me?
I was hounded from your city in fear for my life. It was time. Carth wished me gone.
Who? The Pureborn? They have water in their veins, the spices. There are curds between their ears, and the undying are all dead. You should have taken me to husband. I am almost certain that I asked you for your hand, begged you even.
Only 50 times, Danny teased. You gave up too easily, my lord, for I must marry, all agree. Khaleesi must have a cow, said Eerie as she filled the queen's cup once again. This is known.
Shall I ask again? Wondered Zorro. No, I know that smile. It is a cruel queen who dices with men's hearts. Humble merchants like myself are no more than stones beneath your jeweled sandals.
A single tear ran slowly down his pale white cheek. Danny knew him too well to be moved. Carthine men could weep at will.
Oh, stop that!
She took a cherry from a bowl on the table and threw it at his nose.
I may be a young girl, but I'm not so foolish as to wed a man who finds a fruit platter more enticing than my breast. I saw which dances you were watching.
Zorro wiped away his tear.
The same ones your grace was following, I believe. You see, we are alike. If you will not take me for your husband, I am content to be your slave.
I want no slave. I free you.
His jeweled nose made a tempting target. This time Danny threw an apricot at him. Zorro caught it in the air and took a bite.
Whence came this madness? Should I count myself fortunate
that you did not free my own slaves when you were my guest in Koth?
I was a beggared queen, and you were Zaro of the 13, Danny thought, and all you wanted were my dragons. Your slaves seem well treated and content. It was not till Astapor that my eyes were opened. Do you know how unsullied are made and trained?
Truly, I have no doubt. When a smith makes a sword, he thrusts the blade into the fire, beats on it with a hammer, then plunges it into ice water to temper the steel. If you would savour the sweet taste of the fruit, you must water the tree.
This tree has been watered with blood.
How else to grow a soldier? Your radiance enjoyed my dances. Would it surprise you to know that they are slaves, bred and trained in Yonkai? They have been dancing since they were old enough to walk. How else to achieve such perfection?
He took a swallow of his wine.
They are expert in all the erotic arts as well. I thought to make your grace a gift of them.
By all means, Danny was unsurprised. I shall free them.
That made him wince.
And what would they do with freedom? As well give a fish a suit of mail. They were made to dance.
Made by who? Their masters? Perhaps your dancers would sooner build or bake or farm. Have you asked them?
Perhaps your elephants would sooner be nightingales, eh? Instead of sweet song, Merin's nights would be filled with thunderous trumpetings, and your trees would shatter beneath the weight of great grey birds.
Zaro sighed.
Daenerys, my delight, beneath that sweet young breast beats a tender heart. But take counsel from an older, wiser head. Things are not always as they seem. Much that may seem evil can be good. Consider rain.
Rain? Does he take me for a fool or just a child?
We curse the rain when it falls upon our heads. Yet without it, we should starve. The world needs rain and slaves. You make a face, but it is true. Consider Kaas. In art, music, magic, trade, all that makes us more than beasts. Kaas sits above the rest of mankind, as you sit at the summit of this pyramid. But below, in place of bricks, the magnificence that is the queen of cities rests upon the backs of slaves. Ask yourself, if all men must grab in the dirt for food, how shall any man lift his eyes to contemplate the stars? If each of us must break his back to build a hovel, who shall raise the temples to glorify the gods? For some men to be great, others must be enslaved.
He was too eloquent for her. Danny had no answer for him, only the raw feeling in her belly.
Slavery is not the same as rain, she insisted. I have been rained on and I have been sold. It's not the same. No man wants to be owned.
Zaro gave a languid shrug.
As it happens, when I came ashore in your sweet city, I chanced to see upon the river bank a man who had once been a guest in my manse, a merchant who dealt in rare spices and choice wines. He was naked from the waist up, red and peeling, and seemed to be digging a hole.
Not a hole, a ditch to bring water from the river to the fields. We mean to plant beans. The bean fields must have water.
How kind of my old friend to help with the digging, eh? And how very unlike him. Is it possible he was given no choice in the matter? No, surely not. You have no slaves in Merin.
Danny flushed.
Your friend is being paid with food and shelter. I cannot give him back his wealth. Merin needs beans more than it needs rare spices. And beans require water.
Would you set my dancers to digging ditches as well? Sweet queen, when he saw me, my old friend fell to his knees
and beg me to buy him as a slave and take him back to Karth.
She felt as if he'd slapped her.
Buy him, then. If it please you, I know it will please him.
He put his hand upon her arm.
There are truths only a friend may tell you. I helped you when you came to Karth, a beggar, and I have crossed long leagues and stormy seas to help you once again. Is there some place where we might speak frankly?
Danny could feel the warmth of his fingers.
He was warm in Karth as well, she recalled, until the day he had no more use for me.
She rose to her feet. Come, she said, and Zaro followed her through the pillars to the wide marble steps that led up to her private chambers at the apex of the pyramid.
Oh, most beautiful of women, Zaro said, as they began to climb. There are footsteps behind us. We are followed.
My old knight does not frighten you, surely. Sir Barristan is sworn to keep my secrets.
She took him out onto the terrace that overlooked the city. A full moon swam in the black sky above Meereen.
Shall we walk?
Danny slipped her arm through his. The air was heavy with the scent of night-blooming flowers.
You spoke of help. Trade with me, then. Meereen has salt to sell, and wine.
Giscari wine?
Zaro made a sour face. The sea provides all the salt that Karth requires, but I would gladly take as many olives as you care to sell me. Olive oil as well.
I have none to offer. The slavers burnt the trees.
Olives had been grown along the shores of Slaver's Bay for centuries, but the Meereenese had put their ancient groves to the torch as Danny's host advanced on them, leaving her to cross a blackened wasteland.
We are replanting, but it takes 7 years before an olive tree begins to bear, and 30 years before it can truly be called productive. What of copper?
A pretty metal, but fickle as a woman. Gold, now. Gold is sincere. Karth will gladly give you gold for slaves.
Meereen is a free city of free men.
A poor city that once was rich. A hungry city that once was fat. A bloody city that once was peaceful.
His accusations stung. There was too much truth in them.
Meereen will be rich and fat and peaceful once again, and free as well. Go to the Dothraki if you must have slaves.
Dothraki make slaves. Giscari train them. And to reach Karth, the horse lords must needs drive their captives across the Red Wastes. Hundreds would die, if not thousands, and many horses too, which is why no Karl will risk it. And there is this. Karth wants no Khalisars seething round our walls. The stench of all those horses. Meaning no offense, Khaleesi.
A horse has an honest smell. That is more than can be said of some great lords and merchant princes.
Zaro took no notice of the sally.
Daenerys, let me be honest with you, as befits a friend. You will not make Meereen rich and fat and peaceful. You will only bring it to destruction, as you did Astapor. You are aware that there was battle joined at the Horns of Hazard? The Butcher King has fled back to his palace, his new Unsullied running at his heels.
This is known.
Brown Ben Plum had sent back word of the battle from the field.
The Yunkai have bought themselves new sellswords, and 2 legions from New Gis fought beside them.
2 will soon become 4, and then 10. And Yunkish envoys have been sent to Myr and Valantis to hire more blades. The company of the Cat, the Long Lancers, the Windblown, some say that the Wise Masters have bought the Golden Company as well.
Her brother Viserys had once feasted the captains of the Golden Company in hope they might take up his cause.
They ate his food and heard his pleas and laughed at him.
Danny had only been a little girl, but she remembered.
I have sail swords, too. Two companies. The Yunkai will send 20 against you if they must. And when they march, they will not march alone. Tolos and Mantares have agreed to an alliance.
That was ill news, if true. Daenerys had sent missions to Tolos and Mantares, hoping to find new friends to the west to balance the enmity of Yunkai to the south. Her envoys had not returned.
Meereen has made alliance with Lazar.
That only made him chuckle.
The Dothraki horse lords called the Lazarine the Lemmen. When you shear them, all they do is bleat. They are not a martial people.
Even a sheepish friend is better than none. The wise masters should follow their example. I spared Yunkai before, but I will not make that mistake again. If they should dare attack me, this time I shall raise their yellow city to the ground.
And whilst you are raising Yunkai, my sweet, Meereen shall rise behind you. Do not close your eyes to your peril, Daenerys. Your eunuchs are fine soldiers, but they are too few to match the hosts that Yunkai will send against you once Astapor has fallen.
My freedmen, Danny started, bed slaves, barbers, and brickmakers with no battles.
He was wrong in that, she hoped. The freedmen had been a rabble once, but she had organized the men of fighting age into companies and commanded Grey Worm to make them into soldiers.
Let him think what he will. Have you forgotten? I have dragons.
Do you? In Kaas, you were seldom seen without a dragon on your shoulder. Yet now that shapely shoulder is as fair and bare as your sweet breast, I observe.
My dragons have grown, my shoulders have not. They range far afield, hunting.
Hazael, forgive me.
She wondered how much Zaro knew, what whispers he had heard.
Ask the good masters of Astapor about my dragons if you doubt them. I saw a slaver's eyes melt and go running down his cheeks. Tell me true, old friend, why did you seek me out, if not to trade?
To bring a gift for the queen of my heart.
Say on. What trap is this now?
The gift you begged of me in Karth. Ships. There are 13 galleys in the bay. Yours, if you will have them. I have brought you a fleet to carry you home to Westeros.
A fleet?
It was more than she could hope for. So, of course, it made her wary. In Karth, Zaro had offered her 30 ships for a dragon.
And what price do you ask for these ships?
None. I no longer lust for dragons. Oh, I saw their work at Astapor on my way here, when my silken cloud put in for water. The ships are yours, sweet queen. 13 galleys and men to pull the oars.
13, to be sure.
Zaro was one of the 13. No doubt he had convinced each of his fellow members to give up one ship. She knew the merchant prince too well to think that he would sacrifice 13 of his own ships.
I must consider this. May I inspect these ships?
You have grown suspicious, Daenerys.
Always.
I have grown wise, Zaro.
Inspect all you wish. When you are satisfied, swear to me that you shall return to Westeros forthwith, and the ships are yours. Swear by your dragons and your seven-faced god and the ashes of your fathers, and go.
And if I should decide to wait a year or three?
A mournful look crossed Zaro's face.
That would make me very sad, my sweet delight. For young and strong as you now seem, you shall not live so long, not here.
He offers the honeycomb with one hand and shows the whip with the other. The Yunkai are not so fearsome as all that.
Not all your enemies are in the Yellow City. Beware men with cold hearts and blue lips. You had not been gone from Kaas a fortnight when Piet Pri set out
with three of his fellow warlocks to seek for you in Pentos.
Danny was more amused than afraid.
It is good I turned aside then. Pentos is half a world from Meereen.
That is so, he allowed. Yet soon or late, word must reach them of the Dragon Queen of Slaver's Bay.
Is that meant to frighten me? I lived in fear for 14 years, my lord. I woke afraid each morning and went to sleep afraid each night. But my fears were burned away the day I came forth from the fire. Only one thing frightens me now.
And what is that you fear, sweet queen?
I'm only a foolish young girl.
Danny rose on her toes and kissed his cheek.
But not so foolish as to tell you that. My men shall look at these ships. Then you shall have my answer.
As you say.
He touched her bare breast lightly and whispered,
Let me stay and help persuade you.
For a moment she was tempted. Perhaps the dancers had stirred her after all.
I could close my eyes and pretend that he was Dario.
A dream Dario would be safer than the real one. But she pushed the thought aside.
No, my lord, I thank you, but no.
Danny slipped from his arms.
Some other night, perhaps.
Some other night.
His mouth was sad, but his eyes seemed more relieved than disappointed.
If I were a dragon, I could fly to Westeros, she thought when he was gone. I would have no need of Zaro or his ships.
Danny wondered how many men 13 galleys could hold. It had taken 3 to carry her and her Khalasar from Karth to Astapor, but that was before she had acquired 8,000 unsullied, 1,000 sellswords, and a vast horde of freedmen.
And the dragons, what am I to do with them? Drogon, she whispered softly, where are you?
For a moment she could almost see him sweeping across the sky, his black wings swallowing the stars. She turned her back upon the night, to where Barristan Selmy stood silent in the shadows.
My brother once told me a Westerosi riddle. Who listens to everything, yet hears nothing?
A knight of the king's guard.
Selmy's voice was solemn.
You heard Zaro make his offer.
I did, your grace.
The old knight took pains not to look at her bare breast as he spoke to her.
Sir Jaro would not turn his eyes away. He loved me as a woman, where Sir Barristan loves me only as his queen.
Mormont had been an informer, reporting to her enemies in Westeros, yet he had given her good counsel too.
What do you think of it, of him?
Of him, little and less. These ships, though, your grace, with these ships we might be home before a year's end.
Danny had never known a home. In Braavos there had been a house with a red door, but that was all.
Beware of Carthine bearing gifts, especially merchants of the 13. There is some trap here. Perhaps these ships are rotten, or—
If they were so unseaworthy, they could not have crossed the sea from Carth, Sir Barristan pointed out. But your grace was wise to insist upon inspection. I will take Admiral Grolio to the galleys at first light with his captains and 20 of his sailors.
We can crawl over every inch of those ships.
It was good counsel.
Yes, make it so. Westeros, home.
But if she left, what would happen to her city?
Meereen was never your city,
her brother's voice seemed to whisper.
Your cities are across the sea, your 7 kingdoms, where your enemies await you. You were born to serve them blood and fire.
Sir Barristan cleared his throat and said,
This warlock that the merchant spoke of.
Piet Pri,
she tried to recall his face, but all she could see were his lips. The wine of the warlocks had turned them blue. Shade of the evening, it was called.
If a warlock spell could kill me, I would be dead by now. I left their palace all in ashes.
Drogon saved me when they would have drained my life from me. Drogon burned them all. As you say, Your Grace, still I will be watchful. She kissed him on the cheek. I know you will. Come walk me back down to the feast. The next morning Danny woke as full of hope as she had been since first she came to Slaver's Bay. Dario would soon be at her side once more, and together they would sail for Westeros, for home. One of her young hostages brought her morning meal, a plump, shy girl named Mazara, whose father ruled the Pyramid of Merrick, and Danny gave her a happy hug and thanked her with a kiss. Zarrow Zoandaxis has offered me 13 galleys, she told Iri and Jiqui as they were dressing her for court. 13 is a bad number, Khaleesi, murmured Jiqui in the Dothraki tongue. It is known. It is known, Iri agreed.
30 would be better, Daenerys agreed. 300 better still. But 13 may suffice to carry us to Westeros.
The two Dothraki girls exchanged a look.
The poison water is accursed, Khaleesi, said Iri. Horses cannot drink it.
I do not intend to drink it, Danny promised him.
Only four petitioners awaited them that morning. As ever, Lord Gale was the first to present himself, looking even more wretched than usual.
Your Radiance, he moaned, as he fell to the marble at her feet. The armies of the Yunkai descend on Astapor. I beg you, come south with all your strength.
I warned your king in this war of his was folly, Danny reminded him. He would not listen.
Great Cleon sought only to strike down the vile slavers of Yunkai.
Great Cleon is a slaver himself.
I know that the Mother of Dragons will not abandon us in our hour of peril. Lend us your unsullied to defend our walls.
And if I do, who will defend my walls?
Many of my freedmen were slaves in Astapor. Perhaps some will wish to help defend your king. That is their choice, as free men. I gave Astapor its freedom. It is up to you to defend it.
We are all dead, then. You gave us death, not freedom.
Gale leapt to his feet and spat into her face. Strong Belwas seized him by the shoulder and slammed him down onto the marble so hard that Danny heard Gale's teeth crack. The shave pate would have done worse, but she stopped him.
Enough, she said,
dabbing at her cheek with the end of her tokar.
No one has ever died from spittle. Take him away.
They dragged him out feet first, leaving several broken teeth and a trail of blood behind. Danny would gladly have sent the rest of the petitioners away, but she was still their queen, so she heard them out and did her best to give them justice. Late that afternoon, Admiral Grolio and Sir Barristan returned from their inspection of the galleys. Danny assembled her council to hear them. Grey Worm was there for the Unsullied, Skarhaz Mokandak for the Brazen Beasts. In the absence of her blood riders, a wizened Jack O'Ran, called Romo, squint-eyed and bow-legged, came to speak for her Dothraki. Her freedmen were represented by the captains of the three companies she had formed, Malono Yasdob of the Stalwart Shields, Simon Stripeback of the Free Brothers, Marcellin of the Mother's Men. Resnick Mo Resnick hovered at the Queen's elbow, and Strong Belwas stood behind her, with his huge arms crossed. Danny would not lack for counsel. Grolio had been a most unhappy man since they had broken up his ship to build the siege engines that won Meereen for her. Danny had tried to console him by naming him her Lord Admiral, but it was a hollow honor. The Myrinese fleet had sailed for Yunkai when Danny's host approached the city, so the old Pentoshi was an admiral without ships. Yet now he was smiling through his ragged, salt-streaked beard in a way that the Queen could scarce remember.
"The ships are sound, then," she said, hoping.
"Sound enough, Your Grace,
They are all ships high, but most are well maintained. The hull of the pure-born princess is worm-eaten. I'd not want to take her beyond the sight of land. The Naraka could stand a new rudder and lines, and the banded lizard has some cracked oars, but they will serve. The rowers are slaves, but if we offer them an honest oarsman's wage, most will stay with us. Rowing's all they know. Those who leave can be replaced for my own crews. It's a long, hard voyage to Westeros, but these ships are sound enough to get us there, I judge.
Resnick, Mo Resnick, gave a piteous moan.
Then it is true. Your worship means to abandon us.
He wrung his hands.
The Yunkai will restore the great masters the instant you are gone, and we who have so faithfully served your cause will be put to the sword, our sweet wives and maiden daughters raped and enslaved.
Not mine,
grumbled Skaha's shavepate.
I will kill them first, with my own hand.
He slapped his sword hilt. Danny felt as if he'd slapped her face instead.
If you fear what may follow when I leave, come with me to Westeros. Wherever the Mother of Dragons goes, the Mother's men will go as well,
announced Marcellin, Masende's remaining brother.
How?
Asked Simon Stripeback, name for the tangle of scars that ridged his back and shoulders, a reminder of the whippings he had suffered as a slave in Astapor.
13 ships? That's not enough. 100 ships might not be enough.
Wooden horses are no good, objected Romo, the old Jacaran.
Dothraki will ride.
These ones could march overland along the shore, suggested Grey Worm. The ships could keep pace and resupply the column.
That might serve until you reach the ruins of Boresh, said the shavepate. Beyond that, your ships would need to turn south, past Tullus and the Isle of Cedars, and sail around Valyria, whilst the foot continued on to Mantares by the old dragon road.
The demon road, they call it now, said Milono Yosdob.
The plump commander of the stalwart shields looked more like a scribe than a soldier, with his inky hands and heavy paunch, but he was clever as they came.
Many and more of us would die.
Those left behind in Meereen would envy them their easy death, moaned Resnick. They will make slaves of us, or throw us in the pits. All will be as it was, or worse.
Where is your courage?
Sir Barristan lashed out.
Her Grace freed you from your chains. It is for you to sharpen your swords and defend your own freedom when she leaves.
Brave words from one who means to sail into the sunset, Simon Stripeback snarled back.
Will you look back at our dying?
Your Grace, magnificence, your worship.
Enough.
Danny slapped the table.
No one will be left to die. You're all my people.
Her dreams of home and love had blinded her.
I will not abandon Meereen to the fate of Astapor. It grieves me to say so, but Westeros must wait.
Grolio was aghast.
We must accept these ships if we refuse this gift.
Sir Barristan went to one knee before her.
My queen, your realm has need of you. You are not wanted here, but in Westeros men will flock to your banners by the thousands, great lords and noble knights. She has come, they will shout to one another in glad voices. Prince Rhaegar's sister has come home at last.
If they love me so much, they will wait for me.
Danny stood.
Resnick, summon Zaro Zoan Daxus.
She received the merchant prince alone, seated on her bench on polished ebony, on the cushion Sir Barristan had brought her. Four Carthine sailors accompanied him, bearing a rolled tapestry upon their shoulders.
I have brought another gift for the queen of my heart, Zaro announced. It has been in my family vaults since before the doom that took Valyria.
The sailors unrolled the tapestry across the floor. It was old, dusty, faded, and huge. Danny had to move to Zaro's side before the patterns became plain.
A map? It is beautiful.
It covered half the floor. The seas were blue, the lands were green, the mountains black and brown. Cities were shown as stars in gold or silver thread.
"There is no smoking sea," she realized. "Valeria is not yet an island."
"There you see Astapor and Yonkai and Merin."
Zara pointed at three silver stars beside the blue of Slaver's Bay.
"Westeros is somewhere down there."
His hand waved vaguely toward the far end of the hall.
"You turn north when you should have continued south and west, across the summer sea, but with my gift you shall soon be back where you belong, except my galleys with a joyful heart, and bend your oars westward."
"Would that I could. My lord, I will gladly have those ships, but I cannot give you the promise that you ask."
She took his hand.
"Give me the galleys, and I will swear that Carth will have the friendship of Merin until the stars go out. Let me trade with them, and you will have a good part of the profits."
Zaro's glad smile died upon his lips.
"What are you saying? Are you telling me you will not go?"
"I cannot go."
Tears welled from his eyes, creeping down his nose, past emeralds, amethysts, and black diamonds.
"I told the 13 that you would heed my wisdom. It grieves me to learn that I was wrong. Take these ships and sail away, or you will surely die screaming. You cannot know how many enemies you have made."
"I know one stands before me now, weeping mummer's tears."
The realization made her sad.
"When I went to the Hall of a Thousand Thrones to beg the Pureborn for your life, I said that you were no more than a child," Zara went on. "But Aegon Emerus the Exquisite rose and said, 'She is a foolish child, mad and heedless, and too dangerous to live. When your dragons were small, they were wonder. Grown, they are death and devastation, a flaming sword above the world.'"
He wiped away the tears.
"I should have slain you in Carth."
"I was a guest beneath your roof and ate of your meat and mead," she said. "In memory of all you did for me, I will forgive those words once, but never presume to threaten me again."
"Zaro Zoandaxus does not threaten. He promises."
Her sadness turned to fury.
"And I promise you that if you are not gone before the sun comes up, we will learn how well a liar's tears can quench dragon fire. Leave me, Zaro, quickly."
He went, but left his world behind. Danny seated herself upon her bench again to gaze across the blue silk sea toward distant Westeros.
"One day,"
she promised herself. The next morning, Zaro's galleys was gone, but the gift that he had brought her remained behind in Slaver's Bay. Long red streamers flew from the masts of the 13 Carthian galleys writhing in the wind. And when Daenerys descended to hold court, a messenger from the ships awaited her. He spoke no word, but laid at her feet a black satin pillow, upon which rested a single blood-stained glove.
"What is this?"
Skarhaz demanded.
"A bloody glove?"
"Means war,"
said the queen.
Eddard. "They found her, my lord." Ned rose quickly. "Our men or Lannisters?" "It was Jory," his steward, Vaen Poole, replied. "She's not been harmed." "Thank the gods," Ned said. His men had been searching for Arya for 4 days now, but the queen's men had been out hunting as well. "Where is she? Tell Jory to bring her here at once." "I'm sorry, my lord," Poole told him. "The guards on the gate were Lannister men, and they informed the queen when Jory brought her in. She's been taken directly before the king." "Damn that woman," Ned said, striding to the door. "Find Sansa and bring her to the audience chamber. Her voice may be needed." He descended the tower steps in a red rage. He had led searches himself for the first 3 days, and had scarcely slept an hour since Arya had disappeared. This morning he had been so heart-sick and weary he could scarcely stand, but now his fury was on him, filling him with strength. Men